song of invitation this evening will be number 347. If you want to go to mark that. Turn over to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. We'll be starting there. I'm going to start off just by reading the first 11 verses and then go into a little bit of explanation about that. Starting in verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king of Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? One generation passes away and another generation comes, but the sun abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes to the south and turns around to the north. The wind rolls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, and the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. All things are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been done is what will be. That which is done is what will be done, and there is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which it can be said, see, this is new? It has already been in ancient times before us. There is no remembrance of former things, nor will there be any remembrance of things that are to come by those who will come after me. The main topic of the book of Ecclesiastes is vanity. Vanity is absurdity, frustration, futility. When something is vain, it doesn't matter very much. It's useless. And the book discusses how most of what is done on this earth without any form of spiritual influence is vain, useless. The first 8 verses go into a little bit of futility as an example. Generations come and go, the sun rises and sets every day, the wind rolls about. And I guess in these situations they're used as comparisons to show how no progress is made. The second major thing said in these verses is 9 to 11 is the expression, nothing new under the sun. What this is referring to is the fact that, exactly what it says, there's nothing new under the sun. Everything that has happened before is going to happen again. There's nothing ever new that will happen. No new experiences that can be had by people so that they can experience things that are different. It's all the same. This opening section of Ecclesiastes is an introduction to what the rest of the book will speak about. The next verses, the last of chapter 1, I'll read those in a moment, go into the speaker. And those read, I, the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out my wisdom concerning all that is done under heaven. This burdensome task God has given to the sons of man, by which they may be exercised. I have seen all the work that is done, that are done under the sun, and indeed all is vanity and grasping for the wind. What is crooked cannot be made straight, and what is lacking cannot be numbered. I communed with my heart, saying, look, I have attained greatness and gained more wisdom than all who were before me in Jerusalem. My heart has understood great wisdom and knowledge, and I set my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceived that this also was grasping for the wind. For in so much wisdom is so much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. This second section of the first chapter of Ecclesiastes goes into the speaker, who is identified as the preacher, king over Israel. Most are of the opinion this is Solomon. There are varying opinions. And his goal in verse 13 is to seek out all the wisdom that he possibly could, that is, on this earth. And that's what he does. He goes through and, I guess you could say, does experiments. Most of the book of Ecclesiastes is in many ways a thesis in which his idea is, I'm going to discover this. He goes out and discovers it and writes down what conclusions he's come to. And in verse 14 we see those conclusions. All is vanity and grasping for the wind. He doesn't found anything that is worthwhile on this earth. The rest of the book goes into all those examples, and I'm not going to read all of it, but starting in chapter 2, the last little section of Ecclesiastes I'll read is verses 1 through 11. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore enjoy pleasure, but surely this also is vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine, while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made my works greater. I built myself houses and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards, and I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem, and my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them, and I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor. And this was my reward for all my labor. And I looked at all the works that my hands had done, and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity and grasping for the wind. There was no profit under the sun. This is the first example of the rest of the book, which explains how everything is vanity and grasping for the sun. He went out and attempted to satisfy himself in every way he could possibly conceive to do so. And none of it worked. None of it. Verses 1 and 2, laughter, pleasure, all these things, they didn't do anything. Down in verse 11, I just read all the things he had done, built houses and vineyards, things well beyond most people's capabilities nowadays. Things that most can't afford or ever have the ability to do, yet he did these and came to the conclusion, hey, it's not worth anything. I think this is a really good example for Christians, for everyone, because we don't have to test and see whether anything on this earth is worth doing or not. His Ecclesiastes writer already did it. He had more than most of us will ever have the ability to look at. Again, we can't build vineyards or houses, and if that is not enough to gain pleasure, then what we can do is certainly not enough. And this is something that all Christians should remember, that ultimately nothing on earth is good enough, will ever bring happiness or satisfaction. It is vain. It is grasping for the wind. What does that leave us then if there's nothing on this earth for to make us happy, to give us satisfaction? Well, God. God is what's left. And we know that we have to leave the world to be with God. If you turn over to Matthew chapter 13, verses 7 and then verse 22, this is the parable of the sower, the parable listing the four different seeds. And one of those seeds in verse 7 is the one that fell among the thorns. And it says, and some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprang up and choked them. And as this is one of the parables that we've explained to us, and the explanation for this seed is in verse 22. Now he who receives seed among the thorns is he who hears the word, and the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word and becomes unfruitful. We see that if you attempt to strive for riches or all the cares of this world, all the possible things one can get, all of the godliness will be choked out of you. You can't have both. It's not possible. And that is, a situation. It really is vain to put the things on this earth, which are perishable and will eventually all go away, ahead of God, which will never go away. And if you don't do these things, you'll be rewarded with heaven, which is far superior to anything we could ever have on this earth in the first place. Turn over to 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. These few verses have the title in my Bible, "Do not love the world." And that's very fitting for what they describe. Verse 15, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world is passing away, and the lust of it, but he who does the will of God abides forever." The world is passing away, verse 17 says. It's going to go away. All the things that you amount to in this life, unless they're God, are useless. They're vain. They're going to burn away in fire when the world is destroyed. But if you believe in God and have faith in God and do as He so commands, then that lasts forever. You'll be rewarded with an eternal heaven. We have lots of examples in the Bible of people who have rejected earthly things for God and then take way too long to do all of them. One key example that came to my mind was the apostles. Luke chapter 18, verse 28. Then Peter said, "See, we have left all and followed you." They realized that nothing on this earth was worthy of their attention in regards to salvation, because God was worth all of it, and they left everything. Paul in Philippians 3, 4 through 8 is listed as all his credentials in the flesh. He says, "If anyone has confidence in the flesh, I more so." And the things he lists there are not necessarily possessions, but their statuses, their qualifications, if you will. And he regards all of them as rubbish for God. He gladly sacrifices them when he learns that they're not how you get to heaven, they're not how you please God. He's of the right mindset in this regard. Job, and most of us know the story of Job. He loses everything. Satan tempts him, and he has to live with losing all of his great wealth. But prior to having all of this turmoil go through his life, he was a faithful follower of God who still was incredibly rich. Turn over to Job chapter 1. In the first few verses, it lists a basic description of Job. In verse 3, also his possessions were 7,000 sheep, 3,000 camels, 500 yoke of oxen, 500 female donkeys, and a very large household. So that this man was the greatest of all the people in the East. He was extremely wealthy, but his mindset regarding these earthly things was right, because he is described in verse 8 as being blameless and an upright man who fears God. He had the correct mindset regarding all of his possessions. And when he actually loses all of it, his response in verse 21, "And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked I shall return there. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." That's the correct mindset, that even if you lose everything you have on this earth, you realize it's vain, it's not worth anything. Ultimately, God comes first. Back to Ecclesiastes for a moment. As I've said, the entire book goes through this experiment of the writer going and discovering all the vanity he can possibly find in the world. And in the very last chapter, chapter 12, he wraps it all up. And his conclusion is verse 13. "Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is man's all." That was ultimately what he said. There's nothing on this earth worth your trouble. If anything comes before God, it's not worth it. All the earthly possessions are vain. Going for them is grasping for the wind. And because I did this and it didn't work, and there's nothing ever new that will happen, it won't work for you either. And his conclusion was verse 13, "Fear God and keep His commandments." This is the mindset all of us should have as Christians. That regardless of what happens in this life, regardless of what fortune befalls us, whatever happens, to fear God and keep His commandments. Because if you aim to get worldly possessions, they're not worth anything. They're vain. The last passage I want to look at is Matthew 19:29. And this is a nice passage, as it reminds people that there is a reward. And this is in Matthew's version immediately after, where Peter says, "See, we have left all and followed you." And verse 29 reads, "And everyone who has left houses, or brothers, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands, for my sake shall receive 100-fold and inherit eternal life." 100-fold is better than 1-fold. That's why it's 100-fold as opposed to 1. And eternal life is all of of that, regardless of whether the 100-fold is there or not. So why wouldn't you go for that? What reason could you possibly have for not going for heaven? It's infinitely better. It's eternal glory with God. There's nothing on this earth that beats that. In comparison, everything is vanity. And 29 reminds, in this case the apostles, but applies to everyone, that regardless of what you have given up in this life, you're going to receive a lot more. You'll receive 100-fold in this life, maybe not in possessions, but in satisfaction, in the ability to know you're right with God, and you'll receive eternal life, which is the supreme goal in all of life. Think this far ahead. That's it, basically. If you have not obeyed God, then you're living a life consumed by vanity and worthlessness and uselessness and futility, frustration, all the different words that mean the same thing. It doesn't amount to much. And frankly, that needs to be changed. If you believe in God, if you're willing to turn away from your pursuit of the futility of earthly possessions and obey God, if you're willing to confess your faith and be baptized, then you can be and inherit eternal life. And you'll have to give up things in this world. That's a fact. But in the end, it's so much more worth it. Maybe you haven't been a completely faithful Christian if you've already been baptized. Maybe you've let all of the vanity in the world and all its allure consume you, and you've turned away from God and started following it. Then you need to come back. Hopefully I've persuaded you. It's all useless. If I haven't, read Ecclesiastes, and it'll do a pretty good job too. And you need to come to the conclusion it's useless. It's vain. If you do come to that conclusion, then you can come forward, pray to God. We'll pray with you for you. If it's of a private nature, pray to God yourself. And if you change your life, turn it around, He'll forgive you. If you are subject to the invitation at this time, please come forward as we sing the song that's been selected of 347.